The White House that President Trump has constructed has a lot of chiefs.
If she had become president, the world would still be this complicated.
This will probably get me in a lot of trouble, but I do think there is a degree of admiration for a strong man. I'm sorry.
I've never seen anything like this. People just flat out lie.
Welcome to the Global Politico. I'm Susan Glasser, and each week I'll be taking you backstage in a world disrupted. Join us every Monday morning for new episodes. Rate and subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast platform is. And do email me anytime at sglasser@politico.com. And now, this week's show.
All your allies in the region told you not to go there. And when you withdraw, all your allies in the region told you not to withdraw. And all your allies in the region told you to do something about Syria, but you didn't. So I believe that talking to your allies, listening to your allies, they're there. They know better.
Hi, I'm Susan Glasser, and that was Saad Hariri, the Prime Minister of Lebanon, and this week's guest on the Global Politico. In our exclusive interview, Hariri explains as well as anyone I've heard just what the Mideast looks like today from the vantage point of its leaders. It's a pretty scathing view in many ways of recent American policy in the region. Russia won in Syria thanks to President Obama's inaction. The Mideast unraveling of the last decade is due in no small part to America not listening to her allies. Never mind President Trump's Muslim-bashing rhetoric. He may just be a better partner. For months, various Arab leaders have telegraphed this view of the world as they see it, and I think it helps explain why the Middle East is one place on the planet, outside Russia, where Trump is more popular than Obama. I thought our Global Politico conversation really captured this, really laid out the case. We met in Hariri's suite in the Four Seasons in Georgetown at the end of his week in D.C. And I thought Hariri's tone was measured and thoughtful. But still, taken together, his comments really amounted to a stark and striking indictment of Obama and much recent U.S. policy in the Middle East, what he called the, quote, unfortunate consequence of not acting, which has led to Russia's restoration as a regional heavyweight, the resurrection of the bloody Assad regime in Syria, and inaction on an Israeli-Palestinian peace deal. By the way, Hariri's story is also a fairly amazing personal story. In his mid-40s today, he's an unlikely prime minister, thrust into politics in tiny, fractured Lebanon more than a decade ago, when his father, Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, was assassinated, a killing which is still under investigation by an international tribunal today. Now he's running Lebanon in coalition with Hezbollah, his father's sworn enemies, and supporters of the Syrian Assad regime right next door that has sent an overwhelming flood of 1.5 million refugees into tiny Lebanon, a country of only 4.5 million people. Hariri says he's trying to make this unusual coalition work to save his country from more civil war. It's an extraordinary political balancing act, and I found our conversation fascinating. Not to mention insightful about the Mideast today. I hope you will as well. Thank you so much, Mr.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm here. It's a pleasure to be back in Washington. As you know, I studied in Georgetown, so it's always nice to come back to D.C. And the thing is, in the Middle East, we appreciate the leadership of President Trump, and I think this is something that we see that it has an impact on the region. We are fighting a war on our borders against ISIS, and we believe that Lebanon is a country that is like a buffer zone to ISIS towards the Mediterranean. And there are many challenges for us because we also have 1.5 million refugees that live in Lebanon. And we're a country with a 4.5 million population. So you can imagine how much this bears consequences on everything in Lebanon.
Just to give people context, I think we were debating in the Obama administration taking 10,000 refugees here, and you're talking about 1.5 million in a country of just over 4 million.
Yeah, 4.5 million. So you can imagine the burden and how much it is difficult. And we believe Lebanon is doing a public service for the entire world. And I believe Lebanon should be also compensated for that, because if those refugees didn't come to Lebanon, they would be everywhere in the world. So, and they represent, they came out from a country that they were targeted and killed, and many of those had lost their families, their fathers or mothers. So they came into Lebanon and we couldn't say no. But after 5-6 years, we need to find solutions that, eventually they have to go back to Syria and to solve the issue of the conflict in Syria in a political there has to be a political solution. We believe that, but meanwhile, the international community needs to help Lebanon, especially the refugees, because with 1% growth in Lebanon, we cannot manage, to have jobs for the Lebanese and to the Syrians. It's a very harsh situation that we have in Lebanon.
And yet there are talks of budget cuts here, not only in a massive proposed cuts by the Trump administration to foreign aid, but questions about what kind of support for the Lebanese military makes sense. So what have you managed to extract? When you came here, it was in part because funding for Lebanon was potentially going to be cut.
Yeah, I came here to explain to the administration, to President Trump, what is our story, why Lebanon is the way it is, and the challenges that we face. And I think, when it comes to military aid, this is something that we believe, hopefully, that this is going to be ongoing. Nothing is going to stop on that issue. We believe also just Wednesday after my meeting, there was $140 million additional money for the refugees that were, allocated for Lebanon.
That's from the State Department.
That's from the State Department. But this is additional. It's over the budget that we already had for 2017. So I think the Trump administration understands the challenges that we face. They see the war that we're facing against ISIS, and they see the amount of challenges we have vis-a-vis the refugees, the Syrian refugees. And just let me add that we already have 500,000 refugees, Palestinian refugees, since 1948.
Right, so when you add that all up, it's
it's like 2 million refugees. And I don't think, like you said, at the time when the previous administration suggested for 10,000 refugees, I'm like, 10,000 is nothing for us. It's like we have 1.5 million, and things are as bad as they are. But you go to Lebanon and the refugees are... we deal with them as much as good as we can, and they are all over Lebanon. They're not in camps. They're not in. They live among us, and everything is fine. Once in a while, we have the ISIS starts to want to disrupt the stability in Lebanon, and we fight back.
Well, let's talk about the fighting a little bit. While you were here in Washington, there has been some activity and some action on the ground in Lebanon, and you've had a situation where both Hezbollah and the Lebanese armed forces have been moving to retake territory on the contested Syrian border that had been controlled by, as I understand it, a mixture of ISIS and also Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra Front.
What happened is the army didn't have anything to do with what happened. Hezbollah decided unilaterally to, as they decided to go into Syria without, taking the advice of the government, they went to Syria, and on this battle they went also did what they did. But now, after the few days of fighting, the army is going to take over the whole thing and Hezbollah is going to withdraw, because the fighting is going to continue with ISIS, and we believe this is the real button.
Now, the hardest thing for people here in Washington to understand. I'm sure that every single person you've spoken with, including President Trump, has struggled to understand. On the one hand, you're in a coalition government with Hezbollah. which has been accused.
It's very simple. I'll explain to you. For 3 years, Lebanon didn't have a president.
That's right. And by the way, people don't realize that here in Washington. It was literally 3 years.
Three years without a president. My job and my task as Prime Minister of Lebanon is to shield Lebanon from, you know, from any instability like in Syria or Iraq or any other country that surrounds us. My task is to make sure that we have a country that is stable. We have 1.5 million refugees, like I said. And how to do that? You know, in Lebanon, there is no, you know, the political positions between us and Hezbollah are very well known. They don't agree on my policies and I don't agree on their policies. And there's nothing that there's nothing in common in the, in that area where the regional support comes from and all of that. But when it comes for the sake of the country, for the economy, how to handle the 1.5 million refugees, how to handle the stability, how to handle governing our country, we have to have some kind of understanding. Otherwise, we will be like Syria. So for the sake of the stability of Lebanon, we agree on certain things and we disagree on political issues that we until today we disagree. So there is an understanding or a consensus in the country with all political parties, including the president, is how to safeguard Lebanon.
Well, and of course, Lebanon had its own tragic history of civil war, which has clearly influenced your desire and that of the other parties. And then I imagine that it was the war in Syria next door that helped to finally push the creation of this somewhat unlikely coalition. But President Trump appeared beside you at the news conference the other day.
It is my honor to welcome Prime Minister Saad Hariri of Lebanon to the White House.
And in a way, it sort of captured the dilemma that Americans have in figuring this out because, you know, President Trump said we're fighting Hezbollah.
Hezbollah is a menace to the Lebanese state. The group continues to increase its military arsenal, which threatens to start yet another conflict with Israel, constantly fighting them back.
I mean, even the previous administration, they've always had very clear positions vis-a-vis Hezbollah. And actually, there were sanctions that were implemented by the Obama administration, by the now Trump administration, and previously by George W. Bush also. There were always this thing about Lebanon. Our thought is, you know, Hezbollah is a regional, issue. It's not a Lebanese issue anymore. Hezbollah is in Syria and Iraq and Yemen. So people should not focus on Hezbollah that it's a Lebanese entity only, but it's something regional. In order to solve this issue or to even work around it, it has to be a regional understanding. So I am the Prime Minister of Lebanon. I'm not going to enter into that regional conflict. All I want is to how to safeguard my country, because we've been through civil war. We've seen it. We've paid 200,000 people who got killed in the civil war. And in the end of the day, the unfortunate part of civil wars is people die. And in the end, those who and people sit around the table and come out with a solution. We could have done without the 200,000 killing. We should have sat from day one on the table and found the solutions. And the beauty of Lebanon, it could be a model. Because if you think of the way that this consensus became, it's we're parties from totally different, you know, political backgrounds. And we were, for 10 years, we were bickering and fighting each other politically. But in the end, we saw that, you know, if we continue this, we're going to end up like Syria or we're going to end up like Iraq. So it's better to, before we get there, and because we saw the taste of civil war, mm-hmm. we should sit on the table and see how to safeguard the country and leave the political differences on the side and keep on, you know, discussing it in the media and, you know, having dialogue about them, who convinces the other about the right situation or the right goal for the country. This is ongoing. I mean, if you go to Lebanon, you will find that there is a government with everyone in it and perfectly working. But if you watch the media in Lebanon, we're just, fighting each other on the media. But when it comes to things getting done, like the budget approved, that like...
We could take some lessons from that here in Washington. It's not clear we're going to get a budget approved here.
Well, I'm glad to help if you want.
So tell me, actually, okay, that is an important question. What is the role of American leadership right now in the Middle East? Many people, I think probably including you to a certain extent, were disillusioned with Barack Obama, who had grand ideas about democracy in the Middle East, but ended up with a lot of disillusioned people. Many people are surprised, actually, at how favorably President Trump is viewed in the Middle East, given the negative things he's had to say about Muslims, for example. But yet there's been sort of a hope, actually, about President Trump that he might reengage.
It's the clarity. You know, maybe I would not like maybe I would not like the position, maybe one day, but it's clarity. Once things are clear, we can work around them. But if things are not clear, we believe that at the time of the nuclear deal with Iran, there was a lot of policies taken vis-a-vis Iran that should have not been the same, shouldn't have been taken at the time of the Obama administration. But anyway, I think the lesson to be learned today about this whole thing is for us in the Middle East, especially for Lebanon. First, we have to do our own job to safeguard our own countries. Mm-hmm. And I think the conflicts today in Syria, where Russia is involved and the United States is involved and Iran is involved, I don't think the solution is going to be near. We have to all work together to come to this, to the end of this conflict. President Obama had some thoughts that maybe, his first speech in the Cairo, it was very inspirational. But in the end, there was nothing done in the peace process, and nothing could have been done in the peace process. And that was, I think that those are the parts where people in the Middle East do not appreciate maybe at the time, because people were hopeful that maybe we're going to come to an end for the Arab-Israeli conflict. And that speech was very inspirational, but nothing, concluded on that venue. But there are also a lot of good things, it's not only negative, but there are good things. For us, for instance, in Lebanon, we had the military aid since President Obama. We had also the help of the refugees since President Obama. So, these things, you cannot just, say it's not all one thing or the other. But the thing is about President Trump is the clarity in his discussions about things. That's what makes, I think, in the Middle East,
so what is he clear on then? Syria? Not clear. What he's doing
but even
in Syria
when,
with
but,
the Russians.
Yeah. In Syria, the clear thing is that today they all say in the administration, we still haven't developed the policy for Syria. And this is something at least clear for me, and that is we're getting there, but we're working on it. But what's clear is when you draw a red line and somebody passes that red line, you do something about it. And I think that's the difference. People compare that in the Middle East. And I talk to you from my own perspective, in the Syrian conflict, you might think that, you got the chemical weapons and all of that, and yet just 2 months ago, you saw Bashar al-Assad doing the same thing all over again because he's hiding some of those chemical weapons. Somebody like me knows that, knows Bashar al-Assad, and we know what he does, and we know what he did.
So can he stay in power?
If people want him to stay in power, he might be able to stay in power, but there will not be peace.
Yeah.
That's what people need to understand.
And you do know him personally. Oh, yeah, he's like your him. Generation. He's also.
No. I there is an international tribunal for the assassination of my father, and allegedly there are people who assassinated my father, and the regime was also in question about this and the assassination. But the regime used to control Lebanon. He had troops in Lebanon. So we know their actions. We know their lies. We know what they do to people. We know how they act with people. So when Bashar al-Assad says that, he's going to get rid of the, chemical weapons, he's not. And if you believe him, it's your mistake that you believe him. And that's why when the red line was drawn, you could have come to the same deal after your actions. But that message would have gone down way better in the region, and the regime would have understood that America means business.
But do you think that Donald Trump, I mean, he obviously doesn't know that much more or anything more about the Middle East. What about working with the Russians, as he says he wants to do in Syria? I mean, arguably it was Obama's sort of decision that allowed the Russians to come back in and to shore up the Assad regime. Does that worry you now having so
much
Russian?
I think they're dealing with the consequences of what's there on the ground today. Mm-hmm. I think the Russians, you can work with them. We've worked with them before. It's not all, there are a lot of good factors in Russia. And I think your relationship with Russia is not about Syria only, but you have the counterterrorism that everyone is fighting against ISIS and Al-Qaeda. But Russia is a fact today in Syria. So who do you work with? The main power today in Syria is Russia. So if you want to solve the issue of Syria, you got to talk to the Russians. And I think
Which, by the way, is amazing. I mean, 5 years ago.
But why 5 years ago? And I've just said it.
Yes.
That was the unfortunate consequences of not acting. And now, since they are there, somebody has to talk to them.
Yeah. So tell me just quickly, I know you have to go back to Lebanon. Here in Washington, what is the most surprising thing you've heard from people about the Middle East?
The Votorama. I love the Votorama. Votorama yesterday. I went to the Senate and I was hearing about Votorama. And I went in and I said, what's the Votorama? And they explained it to me, how they vote. And it's actually, they didn't get to the Votorama.
No, they didn't.
They were preparing themselves for the Votorama. But I believe that, when I met with a lot of people in Congress or the House or the Senate,
Ryan.
People who understand the complexity of Lebanon and the complexity of the region, they understand that Lebanon needs to be helped. Lebanon is on the forefront of fighting extremism, ISIS, and all of that. They understand, the amount, the burden that we carry with 1.5 million refugee. And they have question marks about the presence of Hezbollah and all of that. And when you explain to people that in the end I don't want civil war in my country, I want stability, and this is an issue that has become regional and you should think of this issue regionally vis-a-vis Hezbollah. People get the logic what we're saying, talking about. And just let me tell you one more thing. People say, or Israel keeps on saying, Hezbollah's growing, Hezbollah's growing, Hezbollah's growing. But every time Israel attacked Lebanon or Hezbollah, what happened? Hezbollah became stronger. So the solution is not war. The solution is there is an Arab initiative for a peace process since 2002 on the table for Israel to grab. And I believe Israel should grab it.
They want to work with some of your Arab...
No, but they
partners.
Have to... You see, none of the Arab countries can do peace if you don't finish the issue of the Palestinian-Israeli problem. Mm-hmm. because it becomes this is the core issue, the core problem that we have in the Arab world. It's like because Jerusalem is Jerusalem. It's Jerusalem for us as it is Jerusalem for the Christians and it's Jerusalem for the Jews. We understand the sensitivity of all of that for all religions. But fighting will not find a solution if we do not sit, if Israel does not sit with the Palestinians and resolve these issues. And I believe there were plans and there are somewhere there are solutions for that. Well, what are we waiting for? The more we add on the conflict, the more it's going to get complicated. Like you said, if you look at Syria 5 years ago, it was much easier.
Right, new facts 5 years, get created.
Yeah, new facts get created. Why are we waiting for new facts get created? We shouldn't.
Can I ask you quickly about Washington? There are a lot of Iran hawks here these days. I'm sure you did hear a lot from the members on Capitol Hill and also probably from President Trump directly about the Iran deal and his desire to revisit that and questions about how they would pressure Hezbollah. What did you tell them about what the U.S. should do toward Iran?
We didn't get into that. I think my focus was 1.5 million refugees, mm-hmm. security for my country. My focus was how to, restart my economy, my growth. Look, Lebanon is a small country, and we have a say, as long as you know your size, just try to protect what you have. And I think this is what we're trying to do. And I believe this policy has saved Lebanon so far, my policy, and we'll keep on continuing this kind of policy.
So as you said, Lebanon is a small country in a very tough neighborhood. People here in the U.S., in particular in Washington, have felt in the last couple of years in a way that, perhaps the Middle East really is melting down this time in a way that we can't put the pieces back together.
No, it's very easy to put back. All you have to do is be clear and then follow a policy. We believe that the Arab world has been there since centuries and thousands of years, and it will keep on continuing being there. All we have to do is work together. You have a lot of allies. The United States has a lot of allies in the Gulf, in the Arab world. And I believe working with your allies is what's important. When the war started in Iraq, just about how many years now it's been? 15?
2003, and it's now amazingly 14 years.
All your allies in the region told you not to go there. And when you withdraw, all your allies in the region told you not to withdraw. And all your allies in the region told you to do something about Syria, but you didn't. So I believe that talking to your allies, listening to your allies, they're there. They know better.
America has an endless capacity to get it wrong, but maybe they'll get it
but
right
eventually,
in the end.
Exactly. That's what Churchill. Winston Churchill said.
Even my son can now quote me that because I think we're all taking refuge in it. Thank you so much,
Thank
Prime
you.
Minister Hariri. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I'd like to come visit you in Beirut sometime.
Yes,
and
please,
see,
please.
How
please,
it goes. But of course, we thank you, and we thank all the listeners of the Global Politico. And you can, of course, listen to us on iTunes or whatever is your favorite podcast platform, and you can email me. Anytime, sglasser@politico.com. You give me suggestions for new guests and feedback on this one. So thank you again to the Prime Minister, and thank you to all of you.